And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome back. Forever ago. Welcome back to the first episode of The Beat in a Long Time. I am, of course, Nick Carpenter, along with Brendan Quinn. And we've been trying to do this for a minute, I think, and then we just didn't. So we're back now. It's been a month, I think.
Has it been a month?
I think it has. I looked at it yesterday, and that's why I was like, hey, we need to do one of these, man. It's been a month.
Sorry,
and
everyone.
Frankly, I mean, you know, there's not a lot to talk about in this time of year. And the schedules are weird, and it's vacation time and everything else. And, you know, I don't, to be fair, I don't think people have harassed us or anything. So, it's summertime, and we figured now's as good a time as any to catch up and maybe talk to the folks a little bit. So that's what we're going to do today. How are we doing, Brendan?
I'm fantastic, Nick.
I know you're at a golf tournament as we speak. You look tired.
That would be...
You got a beer going, so that's good.
I got a beer going. It's a late afternoon Thursday.
Yeah, we're
made the mistake of going out with our old pal Dan Kilbridge last night.
Oh, for God's sake. So what time did you get up today? Noon? Or did you make it out to the course?
Oh, no. I was up bright and early.
Oh, boy.
Not exactly operational.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been ready for a tee time if I had one myself, but I was up and at the course and at least looking like I was working, you know?
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, dragging ass a little bit. Got a beer to try to kick this thing back into gear. I'm covering the Memorial, which is a Jack Nicklaus tournament down in Columbus. So I'm in the land of herbs.
That's true.
And Herb Street and all the boys. And
now are you downtown? So
I went to a Hyde Park in Dublin. It's a steakhouse.
Oh, okay.
Tuesday night with some people.
That's a nice area.
And all of their... all their steaks were named after
former Buckeyes.
Ohio State football folks. So there's Urban Meyer, and there's the Jim Tressel, and and the Woody.
What'd you get?
And the Herb Street. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, this is a whole section of the restaurant or of the menu. What is this? The I don't know, toxic masculinity section of the.
Well, what did you get? Which steak? Which coach did you order?
I went
Eddie George.
If there was an Eddie George, I would have 100% gotten Eddie George. I would have gotten if there was a Joey Galloway.
Yeah, right. A Sean
if
Springs.
If there was a Bobby Hoying, maybe I would have been okay with.
Andy Katzenmoyer would have been like a lamb burger or something like that.
Yeah. I still remember Katz. I still remember that dude on the cover
the
of
cat?
SI.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. He was a monster.
Yeah.
But no.
So you got the Herb Street, huh? How about that?
I went with the Herb Street. It was a 22-ouncer. Hmm. It was a monster. But I wanted the urban, but
what's
I just
that?
Couldn't. I couldn't bring myself to do it. It was like a reasonably sized, you know, like New York strip. That's what I wanted. But I just couldn't. I'm like, that's just bad mojo, bad karma, bad everything.
I saw that somebody floated that Fox was considering hiring him again for college football.
Herbs?
Yeah. I don't know if that actually happened or didn't happen now. I just saw it was considered, and I'm just like, what? Okay, like what? Does he have credibility with any audience outside of Ohio? Maybe I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, he'll get a job. They'll hire him.
I guess. You probably
while here, should I go to the old town house?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So you're downtown, right? You're in downtown Columbus. Dublin. Like, okay.
No. The tournament's in Dublin. I'm staying at you know that the Ohio State Marriott.
Yeah.
It's like right down by.
Oh,
the,
so that's sort of near downtown.
Yeah, I'm close to downtown.
I would say this: Downtown Columbus is great, as you know.
It is. It is. Where do you think Gilbert and I were?
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, I mean, I've felt the way you felt at the morning of many Michigan-Ohio State games over my life. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to sell anything short, but I think you do have to go to Urban's Pint House, because I think not only is it a historical trip, I think they're selling it or changing it. I think I've read this.
Are they rebranding?
I don't think it's going to stay as Urban's Pint House. I think it's changing. Now, I don't know if it's related. I don't know if the two are related. I don't want to make accusations here or anything, but I think I've read that it's either changing or in the process of changing. Are you going to hang out with Landis? He's probably around the Columbus area
right now. I have not connected.
He could tell you all about it. He could probably give you the tour, I would imagine. Unless he's out. He might be on vacation. Who knows at this point?
Maybe I'll drop a note. But yeah, it appears. I'm just throwing it into maps. Yeah, actually, the Pint House is in Dublin. How about that?
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
Which makes sense because his house was on Murfield Village. Yeah. It's on the course that they play.
It's a really nice area there. I think Herb Street used to live there too for a while, right?
Depends on what you would call a nice area.
Well, it's fair enough. In any event, Brendan is on the course, and he's going to do some Urban Meyer history later today, or maybe later this week. We'll see.
I think I'm going to do it. I won't write about it, but maybe I'll just like turn it into a live Twitter thread.
Just here I am at the Pine. Can you find the seat?
I'm here. I'll give it the old "we here."
Do you think that you can find the actual table he was sitting at? Also,
look, if that thing is not roped off.
Confirm
then they're
whether
not doing
or not,
it right.
Hey, listen, confirm whether or not there was a dance floor. You remember he said they were trying to drag me out of the dance floor. And I was like, I remember thinking, dance floor? Is he at like a B-dubs or something? Is there a dance floor here? What's going on with that? Like, I mean, there's things you can confirm in this whole situation if you're so inclined or bored at the memorial. But we do have questions today.
Distinct possibility. Yes. We got all kinds of questions. I haven't read any of them, so I'm ready to just jump in.
Yeah, we're
right
all over
off the
place.
Diving board. How are you doing? We didn't get an update on your end.
Doing well. Obviously, as people know, our jobs have changed.
Yes.
So I have actually taken some vacation over the last month, which has been good. But have been doing some Lions, doing some draft stuff, and for the folks next week, getting into some more college stuff in the Big Ten arena, looking at some of the new. Not just with Michigan or Michigan State, but kind of branching out and looking at questions for all the new play callers, offensive play callers, and defensive play callers. So we're going to get into some of that this summer. So I will be back in the college neck of the woods, I guess, in some ways, a little bit more than I have been. And I know I haven't been as much. But that's how we go. As people know, Brendan does the same thing. So we're all over the place. That's kind of our deal, kind of our deal here. And on we go. I'm going to keep us in the basketball arena here, at least a little bit on brand with Alex's questions for you to start, Brendan, as a little bit of news on the Michigan front. What's the fallout from Diabate and Houston staying in the draft? And I guess that's a tip off for us to talk a little bit about that. I know that you're not totally wired into all that.
Sure.
The coming.
I can cook up some tips.
But
though,
I think
always.
That you know for the most part what's happening, and I think that that's. Sizable change, right, to the roster, but not something that's probably shocking, but still sizable change.
Yeah, I mean, they are younger and less talented than they were a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Period. End of sentence.
Yeah.
You know, when you had Hunter Dickinson come, not even test the waters and decide to return for his third season, you started kind of looking at that lineup and said, man, if they can, maybe not even both of those guys, but just hold on to Houston, a lineup of Llewellyn, the kid from Princeton, Houston, Terrence Williams, Bufkin, the freshman. There's a lot to like there because it's built around Dickinson. Now you're looking at it and, I think they need to aggressively be looking to add talent, add shooting, add scoring, add age. You look at this lineup right now, they've got a guy from Princeton who's played a lot of games, but he was a guard in the Ivy League. And it has worked out for Mike Smith, and he could be just as good. He could be better. Who knows? But it's an up transfer from the Ivy League.
That's, worked out for that, one guy.
Yes. So no guarantees there. Right. And then you have, three juniors in Dickinson, Terrence Williams, and Jace Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You have one sophomore, Kobe Bufkin, and the rest are have not played.
Right.
So two red shirts in Cheddar and Barnes, Doug McDaniel, Terrace Reed, Greg Glenn, Jet Howard. Like, it is a very young, very unproven roster. They need to go get they got to get at least a guy. They got to get at least one more.
They're not physically developed enough. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just so many unknowns, and it's just it's a very curious imbalance of the ultimate commodity in Dickinson, and then just the counterweight of that being all that inexperience, all the unprovens, all the question marks, rotation questions. Like, there's a lot in that other basket, and it to the point where I think it probably outweighs the Dickinson side of things, of like when you're in the conversation of good team, great team, okay team. Dickinson gives them a chance at, you know, really having a special season, but holy shit, there's
by
a
himself,
lot.
I mean, like,
there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's just how it's going to go. I mean, all the time. I mean, that's just not anything new to anybody, and it's really not even surprising, right? I mean, it's not. I think everyone there more or less expected this, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is something.
No, this is not shocking stuff by any means.
So probably something that's being, I would assume, is planned for as best you can, because seemed like this was kind of a foregone thing for a while. Both these guys are going to go.
Yeah, and look, there are still some really good options out there in the portal, and I think Michigan should be a pretty attractive spot. How aggressive are they going to be out there and doing that? Are they going to take a serious move on a Pete Nance? I don't know. I have not had conversations out there, like Keon Brooks. Like, there are guys, Justin Powell. Like, and this is not. I have not had conversations. I've been knee deep in other shit. But between Juwan Howard, the success that they've had, and the fact that there's minutes and shots available.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a pretty attractive destination to me.
Feels like they're going to get somebody there, right?
I would think so. Yeah. But, maybe they'll go the Michigan State route, where Tom Izzo just kind of dusted off the hands and said, we're holding pat with this roster. I'm like, oh.
Okay.
What? I guess. He has his reasons, but... Didn't make a ton of sense to me.
I don't see that happening. I would think they're going to add somebody.
I would think so.
Like, for all the reasons you just said. Okay, another one here. We're going to go a little out of bounds for Micah's question. You'll like this, Brendan. With the new documentary coming out on the Red Wings Avalanche, did you see this, the documentary? I sent it to you, of course, or tweeted it at you.
Throwing me...
under the bus.
Throwing shade from afar. Just wasn't even ready for it. My plane landed. I turned on my phone, and it's just...
So...
go ahead.
First of all, your thoughts on the documentary, and then second... Micah says, what's the next great Mitten State sports documentary that needs to be told, would you say? Ooh. That is clearly number one, the Avs Red Wings. And in fact, it's interesting that it's taken this long for it to happen. I don't know if it's a 30 for 30 or an E60 or whatever it is, but I have to think that ESPN now finally having the NHL again, of course, probably has something to do with it, right? But either way, it's certainly something that seems overdue to be told. Really cool that they are telling it. But good question, right? Is there other...
That team was badass, man.
Yeah, pretty good. Both those teams
both those teams are badass. I remember being, I was a kid back home, and when Red Wings Avs were on ESPN or ESPN2 or whatever...
Appointment viewing.
You were watching. I did not watch a single hockey game that didn't involve the Flyers. Right. Other than
those ones,
yeah. Red Wings, Avs. I mean, it had so much juice.
Multiple goalie fights, guys.
Okay. Outstanding. Yeah, like, just outstanding.
So, like, is there another one in this state? There's not another one that holds up in terms of that. I think that there's some that would make the case that a Michigan State rivalry, you know, because we've seen documentaries and things on the Michigan Ohio State side of things. We have. We really never, like, I don't think we've seen that treatment ever done on the Michigan State one. And I think people for a long time.
No, that's not right. Fox did one.
Oh, you're right. They just did. That's right. Yeah, but like, that's right. You were in that one recently and it was solid.
I guess it didn't.
Jesus. It wasn't like HBO made a documentary on, you know, and so yes. I guess maybe that would be the one that would come to mind. But in terms of pro sports, you know, Pistons, Lakers, Pistons, Bulls, but like those have become.
Yeah, I mean, they already did Malice at the Palace is now done.
I don't know. That's a good one. A deeper Michigan State than what we got would be in order, in my opinion. That was like a 30,000-foot view in the end. It was fine.
I feel like you could do one on Barry Sanders and the Lions and him walking away and.
Yeah, that's not a. I see what you're saying. That's not a rivalry, but that's like a documentary. Yeah, right.
You know, like I think you could go back and unpack that.
That would be a good one. That would be a good one, because you want to talk about a thing everybody remembers that, you know, kind of changed. I mean, it did. It changed. People have their vision of the Lions being this franchise, and it's true that has been hapless for all these years.
Sure,
but you know. They went from the hapless team that had a superstar to just like, well, now what, right? Like the day that he left, right? So that would be a good one to unpack for sure. Rivalry, though, I don't know. That's a tough one. Not a lot of rivalries, and that's part of the problem, I think, these days, right?
Rivalry.
No. It'd have to be a Michigan State one.
Yeah.
Or a Western Central or something like this. I don't know. Something like that. That would be interesting.
I mean, you could maybe get into like the old high school rivalries in Flint back in the day, and all those schools.
Oh yeah, you could do,
you know, and
the old Detroit and Flint. Yeah,
halfway
interesting. Okay, let's move forward here to Scott. Topic du jour seems to be: will the universe collapse in and on itself if the Big Ten moves to a divisionless scheduling format and Michigan and Ohio State plays each other back-to-back weeks in the Big Ten football championship game? I believe it would have happened in 2018 and 2021, and then it would not have happened all the way back to 2007. So Scott's question more or less has to do with the divisions, I suppose, and that topic that's been on the table. I don't know how much you know about all that. Coming and going on it, but it's been
not enough. What
bandied
when
about,
would it be least. Implemented?
I you know, I, on that front, I don't know, and I think the SEC and everybody, it seems like it's probably inevitable that's going to happen. I don't know when it would be implemented one way or the other, but I think that the thing that people bring up a lot is like from a Michigan standpoint, and because it got brought up in 2012 before they realigned the stuff and got rid of the Legends leaders. Maybe it was 13, one of the two. If Michigan and Ohio State play in the final game of the year and then they have to play again the next week for the championship game, is that like weird? Does that cheapen something? You know, blah, blah, blah. And my answer to that is to Scott's thing, it would have only happened twice in the last like 20, 15 years. So it's not really something that I would be over the top concerned about. But frankly, the whole division topic to me is just another one of these. You know me. I mean, it's another one of these things that just gets in the way of one, you know, you either make a decision on, and this is where I've landed on the college football conversation about what you want to do with the alignment, what you want to do with the playoff, all this, okay? And this is where I'm going to land on it forever. You either say the top 40 schools in the country that have the money are pulling their football programs out of the NCAA and we're going to go into this super league over here. And we're going to get crazy and we're just going to do this, whatever we want, all the money in the world, and we're going to go hog wild. You're going to do that, or you're going to get rid of the playoff, you're going to go back to the bowl system with everybody arguing about who the champion is, and you're going to do that. One of the two. That's it. we're not going to do anything else because anything in the middle doesn't work. And so it's either what, you know what I'm saying? That's where I've kind of settled on it. And all of the stuff in between, you know, I can respect people trying to make progress, but that's where I'm at with it. It's like, I don't know what people want and I don't know where it's going to go, but you just ask the question, you know, when's this going to be implemented? And no one ever knows the answer to those questions, of course. It's always like, well, it's dependent on this. And, you know, the SEC might want a 9-game schedule now after denying it for years and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, geez, I mean, my God, can we just stop it and get under one umbrella and stop this and get the national title thing out of it? In that sense, that with the way that we have it now, where it's just weird, imbalanced thing that no one's happy, either we go back in time or we go all the way forward. Because I'm done with the middle yeah. ground stuff. And that's no surprise probably to anybody listening to this. But yeah, that's where I'm at with
it. What are the pros for doing it? What is the case for doing
it? Well, I think you could argue that, you know, in the way that it's lined up right now, you know, the Big Ten East, for example, sure. You know, the divisions are not balanced, right? Yeah. It's not fair. Yeah. And I think that a lot of Michigan fans and maybe Michigan State fans would argue this too. You know, if you have the protected rivalry, then that would say that if you're Michigan State, then you always have to play Michigan no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then if you're Michigan, you always have to play Ohio State and Michigan State no matter what. Or no, I guess you'd have to pick one or the other. Then maybe you wouldn't play. I don't know how it would all work, but like, your rivals, like Indiana, Purdue, and Michigan, Ohio State, is a different rivalry, right?
Yes.
Football. So it's like, that's always been a conversation point where people are like, that's not really fair. And so to me, when the divisions go, if the divisions went away and the rivalry thing comes up, it's like, I think some people are going to have to be okay with not playing a rivalry game every year, right? I think
And no one's going to be okay with that. So.
No. And so that's
unless,
another
unless I'm hearing more to, pros, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I, you know, I just again, like is there something that can be done here that's going to, you know, fix the end of the day problem, which is the Big Ten's, you know, at a talent disadvantage from the SEC? No. I mean, it's not right. going to change anything from that end, so I don't know. I think a lot of it from a Michigan, from a local perspective would be is like, would it be weird if you saw them back-to-back games? And it's really only happened, I think, like Scott said, twice. It'd be twice in the last 15 years. So, I don't know. But
To me, the idea of Michigan and Ohio State potentially playing back-to-back weeks, I don't think that...
be kind of cool.
I think it'd be cool. And yeah. I think that the actual game, the regular season game... would even be dialed that much more up if you knew that, you know, if one of the two teams wins, it creates the scenario of them playing again.
Yeah.
You know, like that'd be...
And that's what you're trying to do,
that'd
right?
be pretty
and,
cool.
And, well, I mean, ultimately, the case for... And I should have said, because you said, what's the case for getting rid of the divisions? And ultimately, the case is that you don't have to drag an anchor into the Big Ten championship mm-hmm. game and say that, you know, Ohio State, who's a Rolls Royce of a team, you know, got an extra signature win against 8-4 Northwestern in the Big Ten title game.
Right.
Like, what the hell's that? Or they have to go walk through fire against a Northwestern team that has nothing to lose, isn't even in the same, you know, ballpark, right? So, like, I guess that's... And, you know, if you're going to continue on the way that things are, and everyone's going to do it, then you got to kind of follow suit. But that's the biggest, I suppose, draw would be, you know, you're going to be more competitive, I guess, in terms of playoff selection. You'd be able to represent yourself best foot forward in terms of your champion and all that. And as we know, it doesn't always work out where we have yet, I mean, how many times have we seen the best two teams in the Big Ten playing each other in the title game?
Sure.
I mean, it's very rare. So, you know. This would, I think, do that. It would ensure an SEC, too. I think, you know, it would be, you'd have the top two teams playing each other for the SEC title, and it wouldn't be Bama beating the crap out of whoever,
right.
you know, so.
Right. Like, yeah. I don't care either way.
Same.
But, any scenario that, like, eliminates the games that you want to see, I want to see Michigan State.
Right.
And I want to see Michigan versus Penn State even. You know, like,
yeah, I
would throw, you know, like I want to see that game. And Yeah. That means, or and Michigan State.
I want to see Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Yeah, all of it.
And if in the sake of balance, that game's eliminated and I get more Michigan or Michigan State versus
Illinois,
then I don't know. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want that either. So, I don't know.
But it goes, maybe it would go back
I'm
to the
I'm guessing nothing will happen.
I don't know. Yeah, right. I mean, nothing immediately, right? So I'm guessing that you're right, that seismic change would happen before this gets implemented to where...
Totally. Totally.
Okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Moving on.
What else we got?
Let's see here. We got this one from JP. We talked to Ward Manuel's recent comments on Bo Schembechler and the university, and the press's refusal to acknowledge culpability on Bo Schembechler's part is something that Jack was talking about or thinking that was on his mind for us to discuss. And I saw that got brought up yesterday, that I believe it was this week. Ward Manuel was on a podcast. And someone asked him about his story at Michigan or how he got there, and he talked about Bo Schembechler. And sure. He talked about him in, favorable terms, I suppose, and then said something along the lines of not everyone is perfect or what have you. I guess the point being here is people were not happy that Michigan's athletic director spoke highly of Bo Schembechler, I don't think. But also, it's a topic that Michigan has to deal with. And again, it's something that gets brought up, and it's going to get brought up every time this sort of thing happens. So
I remember when I profiled Ward during Michigan's 2018 NCAA tournament run. It was a shame. I learned a good lesson that week, and that's that no one gives a shit about the athletic director while the team is in a Final Four run. Because it was a good story.
I remember that story. It was really good, yeah.
Nobody read it. Nobody.
I read it.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah, man.
I was really angry. I'm like, man,
That was a good story.
And I hate everything I read. I'm like, man, this isn't bad. And then I just watched the next day. I'm like, well, I guess I burned that one. Oh, well. So, anyway. But I remember talking with Ward at length about him being a teenager and his parents and him growing up around New Orleans. And it was a very formative time. And he went into the whole story of Bo coming on down, coming into the family living room, right? And it was like this legend walking through, right? And he still talked about it the way that he probably did when he was 18.
Sure.
And it was the day that Bo Schembechler walked into, like, that is there. And it's an indelible part of his story. And this is where how we look at past figures is enormously complicated. And like, look, I know there's a huge portion of people that are take down the statue, rename the building, and I get it. I 1,000% get it.
We've talked about it for dismissing. More than a year.
We have talked about it. This shit that happened was atrocious, and who knew what? I don't know, but it's obviously a bad look wall to wall, and it's immoral for any place to still kind of allow that lingering history to have a place in the present, right? But when it comes to the guy who played for the guy, right. like I think there is a degree of leeway you give for, like, the person and their personal relationship and the facts of how we view these things. You know,
that's right.
View this person now is, I just don't, I can't look at that as, like, totally black and white.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think it's possible.
That like, war just has to, like,
now,
erases this guy from his memory. But, like, you can still acknowledge the complications here.
Of course. I think he tried to, but maybe it didn't come off well for others.
And I haven't read all the comments. I have no, you know, but
into the person who claims that the press's refusal to I read Ward's comments on this on Sam Webb's website, which is a fan website. So for anyone who thinks that this hasn't been covered, I mean, I'm done with that conversation. It's been covered.
Mm-hmm.
It's been covered well, I think, thoroughly and well by us and other outlets.
Sure.
And I'm sorry if others nationally haven't, you know, that we covered it here. I don't know what else to say on that front. We did. And so that's another thing that's brought up a lot. But I don't know how much that was meant there in that question. But in any event,
yeah,
that's part of it.
I don't know. I mean, we've talked about it a lot that, you know, and Michigan isn't the only place guilty of it. But there is... What's the right word, Nick?
There should never have been a statue built, man. I don't know what to say. Like, you deitized a guy.
It's that figures from the past...
Don't do that.
...who get handled with such hagiography...
Yeah, it's just not
...that
necessary.
It is just borderline ridiculous. And when you're like, that was a real person, and I'm sure he had all kinds of reasons and flaws... And things that, you know, people wouldn't like, but when everything gets turned into, you know, everyone's treated like one of the founding fathers.
Here's what I'm going to say on this one. celebrate.
It gets complicated when you learn shit.
So celebrate teams. Celebrate teams.
Yeah.
Celebrate players. Celebrate wins. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need to celebrate anything more than that. Celebrate teams. Celebrate players. Celebrate wins. Anyone who says you need to celebrate more is doing it for their own personal game. This is college football, right?
Yeah.
Michigan's football program has had so many fantastic teams that you can celebrate on their own. It does not have to be individualized to one person. And I think that that's a separate conversation on its own. And I don't think to whatever's point that I'm not sure Michigan's trying to continue forward with a branding of this being Bo Schembechler University or whatever, but I mean the statue's still out there, right? And it is. I don't think it makes everyone. I know that there are many that are not comfortable with that, and it will continue to be a something that the university will have to deal with, whether it wants to or not. And that's my answer on that one, I guess. As we go for it, it's been the same as it's been for the last 3 years since the Robert Anderson stuff began.
Yep.
3-4 years now, so.
Yep.
Yeah, same as it was before. So,
yeah, I mean, and there's on the university side, it does seem like there's been, I don't know how much of like a reckoning with that name that has actually been had in terms of like, especially on a public scale. Obviously, there's been internal conversations of what the hell do we do?
Sure.
But like, it's almost been like, hey, wait it out. And,
yeah, right. And, well,
you know, like we'll make right with the victims to do this.
I
but
just don't, in terms of
this whole, in terms of this whole can of worms of actually dealing with buildings named after people and this and that and the other,
right?
Hasn't really.
You're not going to be able to.
There has not been a head on. Discussion. Certainly, nothing public that I've seen at least, and
I would agree with that.
I don't think it's going to go away either.
No, so. It's not going away. That's what I would.
Maybe issue a statement or something at some point.
Something at some point would be probably advised. Moving on to Motor City asks, he's got a two-parter here. Michigan State basketball question. What is your trust in Maddie taking a leap next year, kind of like A.J. Hogarth did this year, and can Michigan State win with small ball? And then a golf question for you. Thoughts on the LIV Tour. Do you see the PGA making purses larger? A LIV champ can make more money in the tourney than a PGA event, and that's on top of committing. So maybe you want to do the golf one first. I don't know. Maybe that's more interesting than the Maddie and the or you can do that quick and then go to the golf.
Yeah, man. Can't get away from it. I think I said this a couple weeks ago. Where it's just like both beats between college sports with NIL and the transfer portal and then golf with dealing with the Saudis. It's like, my God.
Now, like the golf thing is fascinating, I gotta say, buddy.
Secondary at this point. Right, yeah, so for any non-golf fans that are listening, a very brief overview. The PGA Tour is facing a major threat from the flank.
It's like a Monday Night Wrestling war going on here, folks.
It is just an incredible situation. So it's called the LIV Golf Invitational Series. It's owned by LIV Golf Investments. Now, LIV Golf Investments is funded by the Public Investment Fund. It's an autonomous wealth fund that's held by the government of Saudi Arabia. The government of Saudi Arabia is the main shareholder. That fund's chairman is, Prince, what's it? Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, I think that's right, who's the son of Saudi Arabia's king. Okay, so this is where the money
royalty here
is coming from, right? And now, and like anyone who follows sports outside of the box that is America knows that Saudi Arabia has leaned into sports as a way of what people call sports washing, and it's giving legitimacy to aspects of the country and. You and I have issues with human rights violations and killing journalists and not giving women equal rights. That are basically just part of the rule in Saudi Arabia. But the Saudis have also bought Premier League teams and bought this and bought that. And like they are in sports.
Very involved, yes.
And there are other countries that have human rights issues that are deep in sports, and everything's very entangled and getting more entangled. But anyway, so LIV Golf is putting on this like rogue tour where it's basically offering just insane sums of money to the best players in the world. Some have taken them. The reports are that Dustin Johnson got $150 million up front without playing to join this tour. Now, I'm guessing the 150, it has to include land holdings and a percentage of profits. I have no idea. But he's just got an outrageous amount of money.
Yeah.
And now he gets to go play. He's going to clearly be the best guy on this tour. And the sums of money for their events dwarf the PGA Tour.
Right.
Like, the total purse, I think, this week at Memorial is like $3.5 or $4 million. So that's divvied up amongst all the golfers, players.
Yeah, right.
The winner of the first Saudi event, which is in 2 weeks in London, June 9th through the 11th, the winner by himself, $4 million. Boom. In the pocket for 3 days of work. On like a bullshit major course with bullshit competition, shotgun starts. It's going to be a total clown car in terms of like an actual golf product.
Right.
But all the money is there. And they've got some big names. They got Louis Oosthuizen, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia. One of the more interesting names is a guy named Taylor Gooch, who most of people don't know, but he's like a pretty damn good 30-year-old PGA Tour player who's walking. And the tour is now
in big trouble here. Yeah.
They're in trouble. And there's the question of, do they just outright ban anyone who participates in this tour? Then they have not said what they're going to do. Despite the fact that this shit is happening in like 9 days.
Yeah, it's already started, so I don't know
The theory that a lot of people here have is that, you know, they will announce what the sanctions are on these players when the first ball is struck at that tournament. Which it's like
a bit dramatic.
I kind of like that. Yeah, I think that's a bit dramatic.
All right. is the guy from Happy Gilmore running the PGA? What was that guy? He was like, "This is good for the game." God damn it.
So. Yeah. Everyone's kind of walking around, like, really uneasy with the whole thing. And everything's going to be different once this tour begins. Like, the U.S. Open is going to be the following week. And there's probably going to be upwards of 15 to 18 players in that event who played in the Saudi event, you know? And it's like, are these guys going to be walking around like the Sharks and the Jets? Like, you know, like there's one side of the cafeteria and the other side of the cafeteria. I don't think so. I don't think the players are particularly.
Well, I was really going to say, do you think the players care at all?
Like, no, but the fan, you know, the U.S. Open's in Boston. There's going to be a bunch of drunk Boston fans yelling at, you know, Sergio and Lee Westwood and DJ. Like, that's going to be pretty interesting. What do I think?
I mean, there could be a protest. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's layers. And it's, it's really funny because, you know, it all also, the whole thing bleeds into, like, there are two sides of the fence on every single thing, right? And now, like, you have the freedom of competition folks that are like, why shouldn't these guys be allowed to go play in this field? The NBA deals with China. Why can't these golfers deal with Saudi Arabia and take that money? And whatever, man. I mean, if that's sure. But there's very much like one side and the other side. And that's how you feel about it. And there's no middle. And it really can't follows a lot of the other lines that are out there. But the question was, what do I think? And this is the more interesting
PGA,
conversation.
What are they going to do?
This is the more interesting conversation. What do I think the PGA Tour should do? I think the only real solution here is that they've always stood by this whole, like, we only pay, like, you earn your keep. You compete for what you earn. That shit is over with.
That's over
you
with,
need,
yeah.
You need to get rid of that yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you go into the year saying, okay, you know, let's look at last year's FedEx Cup standings. Those top 20 players, you go into the following year and, you know, your year salary, as if you were in the NFL or whatever, you get $15 million for your year membership on this tour, and you don't play any other tours. And the guys 20 to 50, you get $17 million, right? Mm-hmm. And right on down the line. But you have to come up with upfront money that secures those guys for the year.
It's kind of insane that they don't already have that, to be honest.
Here's the thing.
Or something along the
lines. The PGA Tour is very similar to our friends.
Here we go.
The NCAA. Yeah. Where
now we've arrived at the real problem.
If you and I were to sit down and be like, let's design professional golf. There's this new sport, golf. Let's design the league that is going to conduct
sanctioned
the competitions.
Golf,
nobody ever would have designed the way that the PGA Tour operates. Nobody ever. And it's the same thing with the NCAA, where it just came out of nowhere because schools wanted to start making money on football. Mm-hmm. And then they just started throwing bullshit on top of bullshit on top of bullshit.
Well, now we gotta do this now. Yeah, right.
And then it ended up with a 600-page rule book that says you can't put cream cheese on bagels during an official visit. You're like, well, I think we're past the point of what the initial purpose of this was, folks.
Yeah, right.
The PGA Tour is gonna have to fundamentally change what it is, and that gets really complicated because the PGA Tour operates with a tax exemption as a nonprofit, which is also outrageous.
Ladies and gentlemen, what is happening here? So the Saudi Golf League is nothing more than just a disruptor to a stale marketplace. Is that what you're telling me?
With the shock as the front man. Yes, Greg Norman himself.
The Shark, that's right.
Running point, all hell breaking loose.
Terrorizing golf.
But you're there.
Well, guys are going to make money, right?
Like, really uncomfortable for a lot of people when they host this event in London and Matt Jones, the 80-whatever ranked player in the world, wins and walks with $4 million. And you're going to have guys, Justin Thomas, right? Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, all these like under 30 guys who are just going to be looking at that being like, what the fuck? I could beat that field with four clubs in my bag.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like, how do you counter that? And if it's only threats, if it's only the threats of tournament bans or PGA Tour bans.
It cannot be bans, man. Maybe, you know that.
Maybe not playing in a major or not getting your Augusta Invitational. That will hold back some people. Some, you know, some people will be like, hey, man, I play golf because I want to win majors and I have enough money, so I don't give a shit. I'm not going to risk that, right?
Yeah, but they're not going to be told what to do.
Some will. You know, some will follow that line. And so, and the other thing is the PGA Tour has Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods is a loyalist, and he has come out and been like, I'm with the tour. And there are guys who play who idolize Tiger Woods that are like,
well, that's something. Yeah,
if
that's
like Justin Thomas is like, if Tiger's over here, then I'm over there. Period. End of sentence. You know? So there will always be that group. But there's going to be guys who aren't going to say,
no, for sure.
I'm going to go make all this money for the next 5 years, and then I'm going to go into golf course design, and none of you will ever see me again. And I'm totally okay with that. You know? And if you lose 5, 6, 7, 8 of the top 20 players in the OWGR, that's official world golf rankings, well, you have a diluted, shitty product at that point. And the PGA Tour, which already struggles with their events drawing enough interest and being important enough and like people caring about week-to-week events.
Oh, yeah.
You dilute those fields even more. Buddy, I mean,
bad news. Something gotta change here, one way or the other. Yeah.
Bad news.
Do you have any thoughts on Maddie and the Spartans there? That was the second part of that question. We're too early on that?
No, I mean, I've seen Maddie Sissoko play a lot of basketball, and I don't think he's a guy who's ready to go and play 25 minutes at this level. So I think they should have gotten a center, and they haven't.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. You know, like, that's the fact of the matter. And I don't know if it's a stubbornness thing.
Yeah,
a couple
questions about that, too, yeah.
I don't know if it's a stubbornness thing. But there's just no way you can – there's – like mount a real case that's like, yes, it's time to lean all the way in on Maddie Sissoko this year.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
One more golf question for you before I go back. Jeff asks, longtime listener Jeff says, never purchased his own set of clubs. He's returning to the game after 15 years away, and he's been playing. He played with hand-me-downs as a kid, so he's asking you for recommendations. Don't need to be top tier, but maybe something above average. You got any suggestions for him there on what to get, like a good starter?
Yeah.
So he's not clueless at golf, but someone who hasn't been in the game for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a lot of it's going to deal with what kind of your price point is. But like just getting very kind of basic. Well, first of all, you know, if you want to buying used versus buying brand new clubs, so brand new versus used, like you can get really good, inexpensive, refurbed or used clubs that you can even get like off the factory sites. Like Callaway's got a really good used, like officially, you know, taken care of club
right.
and all that shit. It's a decent site, but like all in, you're going to be looking at probably $600 to $800. You know, I think just getting like a basic ass set of Callaways, like Callaway Edge, I think is like their like beginner kind of game improvement set. And you can buy like the 10 piece thing where you get the woods and the irons and the wedges
yep.
and a put and like an Odyssey putter or something like that. That's probably your best bet. You can get that shit at Costco.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I think just start there and,
yeah,
you know,
it's not a bad idea.
Get a set of clubs that you put in the bag and you show up at a golf course. You don't look ridiculous. Right. But then also don't go out and spend, you know, $1,300 on something that might end up sitting in the garage for a year or two before, you know, you give them to the neighborhood kid down the street because he wants to get into golf. Like,
sounds like you've seen that happen before.
Yeah. A number of buddies have reached out when we were going through this. I was trying to pull up a text conversation I had with a friend of mine back home who was like, "I'm getting into golf." I'm like, "Okay."
You're like, "No, you're not.
No, you're not, dude." So, he's got like three kids. Like, you're not getting into golf. Your life's over. You're not doing
this. You can't afford this, time or financially. Yeah.
Then I would say my other like advice would be to play. Like, go out with people who are would be okay with you kind of knocking it around and get like comfortable on the course. Like, if your plan to get into golf is to go pound balls at the driving range, it's not gonna
just
work.
Go out there and play.
Just go out and play. Play at odd hours, play in the afternoon, go play nine.
Play alone. I know people that do that.
I play alone. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like just getting out there and hitting balls and starting to kind of understand mm-hmm. what it means to make good contact and all that is totally different than just smacking balls on a driving range, you know, shitty old driving range balls.
Until you get blisters on your hands.
Shitty old driving range mat does absolutely nothing for you.
Just messes your back up. That's all it does.
Back up. It gives you bad swing thoughts. Like, find a friend who plays and go out with him or her like two or three times.
Yeah.
And then just keep playing.
Very good advice. I got a football question.
You can Thank sip God. Your beer. I was about to say, did anybody
you
ask
sip
you
your beer
anything?
For this Jesus. One? This is a good one from Alan. College and pro football trend question. Do you think the role and roster spots of outside linebacker are being transferred to hybrid edge and safeties? And the answer is yes. And it's interesting that we hear teams still sort of talk about guys in the similar lingo. Like, you know, when someone says linebacker, that nowadays that can mean so many different things, right? So I think that it all depends, and I think defenses are so protective of their own language and their own lingo and what they call people. Like, we see a lot of that, you know, when Don Brown was at Michigan, he called the hybrid edge player or the hybrid space guy, you know, the Viper. And I've heard other people call it a star or a shark or whatever it might be in your own system. And I think that, you know, it is interesting when we look at guys, and I know that colleges look at guys from a recruiting standpoint when they look at kids anymore. I think a lot of it is he a front seven player or is he a back seven player? Is he a front level defender or is he a back level defender or is he a mid level defender? And I think those are kind of the buckets that we're maybe seeing, you know, sort of divided, I think, more, which is which is interesting. And I think it's an ongoing conversation, and it's one that I don't know that people have caught up on quite as fast as I thought they would, you know, because I think that we've seen this in college a lot, and the NFL is starting to find it. But I see a lot of Lions fans, for instance, struggle more with that concept than college fans. Like Michigan and Michigan State fans, I think, understand this faster, or at least they you know, when we explain it, they have an example in their head, like, oh yeah, right, like Darius Snow at Michigan State's going to be that kid this year, and Michigan's had several of them. Whereas the NFL, you know, I think it's maybe more a special role, but we are seeing more of it, and I think that you're also seeing more of a defensive end role changing. And all of it is just being, you're either an interior tackle, an edge who can stand up and cover, a stack linebacker, or you're in the back. That's kind of, yeah. And then after that, it gets specialized on out. But it's definitely interesting as, you know, as the rules have changed, as speed has increased, skill has increased. And I think about this all the time, now more than ever, with how my job is. And I know, I'm sure you do too, the specialization of training from high school athletes that we see now come through. And I know basketball is the same way. What you see gained from that and what you see lost from that is always fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Like the kids that spent all the time training with, you know, a pass rush coach or something, a lot of times they have all this really great stuff, but then they don't know how to play like basic. It's just, it's been a fascinating thing to see. And there's times where I don't know, because sometimes I'll see the specialized kid and I'm like, that kid is a terrific player. And then I'll see the kid that's not, and I'm like, that kid's, you know, so it's, I don't know, but it's always fascinating to see, you know, how that thing is kind of, and I know basketball is kind of going the same way.
Yeah, so, and like the kids who just have kind of like don't have like natural athletic instincts in some way, shape, or form. Like, I remember Harbaugh
trying to make himself into a player. Yeah.
Harbaugh having that quarterback camp. I think I brought this up before. Harbaugh having that quarterback camp. I had to cover it for you once. I don't know where you were, but I had to go. And it was at Michigan Stadium, and he was hitting pop flies.
Is it the baseball? Yeah, right.
Yeah. Hitting pop flies to him. And, like, you can tell.
Who can do that?
Like, who just has, like, the basic kind of instincts of, like, I'm going to take three steps back first, right? And now I want to judge it, and I'm going to get under the ball, and I'm going to catch the ball.
Versus without the kid wincing,
that, like,
or
there's no wincing, right? And you lean into catching it and things like that. Versus,
are you
the
an
kid,
athlete or not? Yeah,
yes. Right. That's a thing. Yeah. So,
100%. I know it drives college coaches
crazy. What's
crazy
is that, like, before there was used to only be the quarterback camps for these kids, you know, but now it's I'm sure there's a running back academy and an offensive lineman academy and a middle linebacker academy, and a wide receiver camp, and this and that and the other thing.
And it's fascinating.
You get pigeonholed immediately, and how often does that work out?
And it's like what we see. You see a lot in basketball would be like the specialty. Well, I'm a shooter. That's all I am. I'm just a shooter. Well, what the hell's that? Like, if you don't know how to play the game, you know, like, if all you do is spend all your time, you know, and we used to cover high school sports, I would see it. I would see parents dump money into that sort of thing. Like, well, my kid is a slot receiver. What are you talking about? He's 14. Like, what are you talking about? Right? Like, so, yeah, interesting conversation to be sure. But that's definitely something that is changing in the NFL and in college. I think the college fans would see it more. But the Lions are just switching with the back and forth with even and odd, and people are making too big of a deal of it. I always say this, but it always reminds me of that conversation, because it's like, these guys are more interchangeable than people realize, and sometimes bucketing them into positions like that can get a little more. Sometimes I think in the NFL too, it's for money. I think they slot them, you know, and I've seen that with left tackle makes more than a right tackle, right? By standard. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think sometimes that still has a play in it. It's very interesting. It's an interesting conversation. Maybe not for everybody, but I always find it interesting one way or the other. My last one I've got for you, my man, before I let you go here. Is a wrestling question.
Perfect.
Did you know that AEW is coming to Detroit later this month?
I did not.
And did you know that your guy is going to be there? AEW will be in at Little Caesars, actually. So for the first, they're making their first trip to the state, which is insane to me. I don't know. Metro Detroit is home to more wrestling fans per capita than probably any metro area in the United States outside of Philadelphia. But I digress. The question here, with AEW coming to Detroit this month, I was wondering who your favorite tag team is and who your all-time favorite tag team is. So my current favorite is FTR, who is part of AEW.
What does that stand for?
Follow the rules, actually, is what that stands for. There's other things that it stands for, but the inside joke is follow the rules, because FTR is the they're the quintessential, like, throwback old school pro wrestling team, in that they're like, they're what you remember if you grew up and watched 80s pro wrestlers. So they all they make sure they're a tag team, so they make sure they hold the ropes, they make sure they tag properly, they make sure that they follow all the inside and outside stuff. It's not they make it look more real than, you know, most would do, I would say. And then my all time favorite it's probably too hard to put on, but the reason I like FTR, my all-time favorite is Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, and that's who they remind me of the most. So that the Brainbusters or Arn and Tully is my all-time favorite.
Wow.
Both heel teams, babyface teams would be your Steiners or Road Warriors would be my favorites. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited for you to see this when it comes
now,
to
now, I'm going to see if I can get anything backstage. If anybody has got a hookup for your guy here. In the coming weeks. I've already got a couple. I'm already working a few angles, but if we can get anything else, you know where to DM me. But that show's coming up
soon. I like using this podcast for your own.
I mean, why not?
No, sure. I mean, hey, shit. Anyone has a nice, while we're doing it, fuck. If anyone has a nice country club invite here in Columbus, I got my sticks with me. I'll be happy to go out and play. Maybe a little double eagle.
There you
know?
Go.
Yeah, hit your boy up.
And maybe a little dinner at Urban's Pint House after? Who knows?
Obviously. Right? Drinks on me at Urban's Pint House if you get me on at your country club in Columbus. So I'm thinking back to ECW, as I always do when we talk about something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And the Dudley Boys.
They were good.
They were good.
They were really good. Yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot. That's too hard of a question. So
Public Enemy? Wasn't that the other one?
They were good. Yeah, they were. And they went to WCW, I think, in the middle of all that. Rocco Rock and what was his name? Johnny Grunge. Yeah, dear God. Well, I'm ashamed that I remember that, but Rocco
we
Rock.
Need,
all right,
we need. Jesus. If we want to talk some more wrestling on this podcast,
yeah,
I want to do a full show on the rise and fall of ECW.
Okay, yeah, we can do
Let's
that.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
but
then
I'll at Maybe least that, have points of references where we can talk about. Like, I remember Sabu. Sabu was my guy.
We told the people we were going to do some sort of deep dive show this summer.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we'll do Brendan's wrestling memories. I don't know. Maybe that's on the table, folks, as a suggestion. How's that? We'll see if he remembers that down the road.
Hell yes.
In any event,
all right.
We'll wrap that up.
You got anything else? You got any?
No,
other bribes you're looking to put out there, or anything like that?
No, all good on that. Okay. Just the wrestling.
Good
bribe.
Work,
bribe.
Yeah. Yeah, hook up Nick. Let's get him backstage. Let's get him in the ring.
No, fuck no.
Let's
not
go
in the ring.
All the way forward. I'm looking forward to the preview pod of that event. When is this happening?
End of the month, 27th, somewhere in there. Last Wednesday of the month of June.
Well, I want a preview pod. I will watch this now.
So it'll be June 29th.
We can have a pod afterward where we discuss it. I ask you all my dumb questions. This is very exciting development.
Big news.
Everyone coming to town. Yeah, my favorite podcast is coming to town. They're playing in a Royal Oak the Dollop.
Are you going?
It's coming to Royal Oak. Hell yeah.
There you go.
I think it's August or October, something like that. But yeah, everyone's coming to town. Love to see it. Well, signing off here from Murfield Village.
We'll see you in a month. No, I'm just kidding. See if we see it in a couple weeks.
We'll get back on track here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read Nick's stuff. He's been absolutely crushing football. Read my golf coverage, because someone has to. And be sure to tip your bartenders and servers.
Happy farewell to the county, the place where I